I got 3 high C's, a water, and some Gardettos.
Make for some good crunching.
Good crunchings indeed.
Oh, yeah.
There are despots and dictators, political manipulators. There are bluebirds with the intellects of fleas. There are kings and catty tyrants who are so lacking in refinement. They'd be better suited swinging from a tree.
He was born and raised. All right. Episode 5. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Animation Station. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Robbie.
So, today is going to be a little bit different because we're actually doing a double feature of sorts,
yeah.
But they're intertwined, so it won't feel like a long movie.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a good idea to do them together because it's...
Well, collectively, the running time for them makes one James Cameron movie, so... I didn't say a good James Cameron movie, no, I'm just kidding. It'll be, for this, relative to quality of the movie, it'll be Aliens, because it's a movie that we both love. And we found out that there is a documentary linked to this movie's origin.
Yeah.
So, this movie in question is The Emperor's New Groove, which we are enormous fans of.
Yes, absolutely.
As we both love zany humor, it's very colorful, it's very fun, and we can both tolerate David Spade for 70-some-odd minutes.
Right, yeah.
Which normally we wouldn't do, but it's all right. We love our art, and this is... What so what happened was, I listened to this podcast called The Gravity Falls Gossiper, and I had heard mention on one of the episodes, Adam Warrock or Eugene On and Chris Haley.
Yes.
Two guys, they're awesome. We met Adam
at a comic show.
He was super awesome. And I talk with Chris on Instagram and Twitter sometimes. But he had mentioned this documentary about The Emperor's New Groove that apparently had been kind of going around Tumblr, I guess. Like, there was... someone had found a copy of it, put it up on either Tumblr or Vimeo, and then it just kind of had this very brief viral run, at least from what I'd seen. Because, like, what happened was I found it, and then I was able to obtain it onto my hard drive. And I watched it, and I thought it was great. Because it's a very fascinating and very strange take on, like, the movie that we know for The Emperor's New Groove is very dynamic and silly and wacky, and the original movie that it was supposed to be based on was completely different.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you take over for a bit? I've been talking
about I must have missed that streak of popularity.
I reblogged it. You may have missed it.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. It was a while. It's been a while since I've listened to the Gravity Falls Gossiper, so...
It's a great podcast. I really love it. I mean, they've been on, or I don't know if they're going to be on indefinite hiatus or if it's just done.
Yeah. Because
I know that Eugene, he moved away from, like, he and Chris used to live close to each other.
Philadelphia now.
Yeah, I think, because they were in Tennessee or something. So,
yeah.
But yeah, like, I feel bad. I really miss that show. Because the seasons have been getting really good, and I want to hear what they think about them. But in podcast form, because my eyes are occupied at work 9 hours a day. So I watched the documentary, and I was like, this is great. I should show this to Robbie. So we did a double feature thing of sorts.
Yeah, well, so we watched the documentary, which is called The Sweatbox.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, we should just talk about The Emperor's New Groove, because it's kind of so intertwined that it just kind of made sense.
Yep.
So,
it's one of those movies, like, we've got a handful of ones that we can basically quote verbatim.
Yeah.
Because
we've
seen them so much. And this is one of them.
Yeah.
So, I guess, let's just kind of get into, I'll tell you, for really quick, like, since I assume that, or I don't want to assume, but if most of you have already seen The Emperor's New Groove, you probably know the basic kind of premise of it.
Yeah, we don't really need to outline the plot too heavily.
Well, very briefly. You want to very briefly describe it?
Yeah, so the basic plot is you've got Cusco, who is the emperor, and he is very selfish, and he wants to essentially, like, level this guy's house.
no, not his house, the entire village.
Was it the whole village? Okay.
Yeah, it's the entire village.
Oh, yeah, because He wants to level this whole village to make it his own personal water park.
As an 18th birthday present.
As an 18th birthday present from Cusco to Cusco.
Yep. Because no one else will be at his party.
They'll all be forced to be there.
Yep.
He's the emperor.
But they will not get any cake. They just have to watch him eat.
No, yeah. He just invites everyone over to watch him eat cake for an hour.
I wouldn't put that out of character for him at all.
No, it's pretty much.
If anything, he would enjoy the cake more because he would know that none of them could eat anything.
You just get to look at me have this cake.
You'll never even know what luxury foods are. But yeah.
So Pacha is John Goodman's character. He's a damn it.
we were talking before about this is kind of an outtake thing, but how Robbie has a tendency to apparently whenever he's thinking or considering something, how to phrase something, he rubs his face and his beard and he obscures his mouth like this. So I didn't mean to give him crap for it, but I just like I noticed that he has a tendency to do it.
My upper lip.
I'm not trying to make you self-conscious. I just noticed that you do it.
I know.
I'm sorry.
I'm working on it.
And I'm also trying to not say like as much anymore. And trying to be less boisterous with my laughter. So, I can subdue it down to, like, a New England chuckle. Like a, ha-ha. But, I don't think I'll do that.
No, don't.
Okay. That's upsetting. It's uncomfortable.
Don't suspend your laughter.
Can I suspend my disbelief?
You probably should.
Okay. I'm pretty flippant about using my disbelief.
But he wants to knock down this, he wants to knock down this village. Pacha, I guess the village representative, is summoned to the castle.
Yeah, like, he of all people, I was wondering why Pacha? Like, he's not the village leader, from what I know, but he's just, like,
I think
he
was there. I think his family is, because he lives on top of the hill.
Yeah, well, and his family has been there for a long time. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe he had, like, the longest standing property or something.
Yeah,
and they're just like, you may as well, like, go find out, like, where exactly you want it positioned or something. Like, it's just based on how much sun it gets.
Yeah, right.
It's just all about him tanning. I'm like, Cusco, you're just the worst.
Yeah.
you're the teenage, you're the sweet 16 before that was even a thing.
Yeah, like,
awful. And that's saying something.
So then after meeting with Pacha and telling him he's going to level the village, he fires his advisor Yzma, voiced by the incomparable Eartha Kitt.
We love her so much.
Oh, so good.
And it doesn't even take her that long to break out one of her trademark purrs.
Yeah,
which
right.
is great. Because as soon as she did that, I was like, that's Eartha Kitt.
Yeah. So then Yzma tries to kill Cusco and accidentally turns him into a llama.
Yep.
And then he ends up back in Pacha's village as a llama, and he has to make his way back to his palace to turn into a human again and you know, be the emperor again. And then all the sort of misadventures and goofiness along the way with Yzma and her incompetent companion...
Like, is he her boyfriend? I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I don't
they
know.
They made that joke in the sweatbox, which was kind of weird.
Well, no, like, because there's another, I think Cusco has, like, some kind of throwaway line or something when they're having dinner, where, like, he's more just commenting on his age. He's like, he's in his late 20s. And she's like, I'm not sure. Where, and he also mentioned, like every decade or so, she has a new one.
She recycles them.
So Yzma was the original cougar, apparently. I don't know. I would prefer to not think that they're romantically inclined.
Yeah,
but
no, it makes me very.
This is what the internet has done to us, I guess. I don't know. Like,
the
of all the ships to not have, that would be of all the ships and all
the. In the age of shipping.
Every time I see free shipping on Amazon, I immediately think of Tumblr. I hate it so much.
Can't charge you for shipping on this.
Yeah,
shipping for free.
Oh, can't we? We can spend a lot of mental energy on it.
Yeah,
but we won't charge you for it. Anyway, sorry.
So
they go out to find him.
So as Pacha and Cusco are making their way back, they're being dogged by Yzma and Kronk.
It's got almost like a Road to El Dorado sort of feel to it. Or you know, do you know the Road 2 movies that are like Bing Crosby and Bob Hope? They were also very kind of zany comedies.
I'm aware of them. I never watched them.
I feel like that was sort of the feel that they were going for because it's a kind of a mismatched thing where Bing Crosby is the, he's like the straight man,
Right.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Bing Crosby is the straight man, and then Bob Hope is supposed to be like the comic relief sort of thing. Goofball. So, and that, you know, like Pacha and Cusco, respectively.
Right.
But I guess like how it differs is that like there's no love interest. It's just kind of like a buddy road.
Yeah, which is kind of nice.
Which is cool.
And also, well, no, it was the thing I was thinking about watching the movie, and then after having seen the Sweatbox.
Yeah.
Where in the Sweatbox there was a romantic element.
Well, yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah.
That was kind of one of my favorite things about The Emperor's New Groove is that isn't present.
Well, I think it's because that's such a staple of a lot of movies in Disney's canon, especially during the Renaissance, because this was right at the tail end of the Disney Renaissance.
Right, yeah.
I think it was like Mulan, Tarzan, Emperor's New Groove, and then it started to kind of go downhill. Because then they had Brother Bear, they had Treasure Planet, which... I don't mind both of those movies, but they're not great. They're pretty. I love some of the design elements of Treasure Planet, but my God, that movie is such a mess.
Yeah, like, I wasn't a fan of it.
Plus, I also like my young Joseph Gordon-Levitt. His weird kind of angsty haircut and the Goo Goo Dolls doing the soundtrack.
That haircut, weirdly now, it's like way out of its time.
Which is weird because back in the 90s, that was called a rat tail. Do you remember that? There was this kid that was like, I think he went to like my elementary school or something that had one of those things. It wasn't puffy at the end. It was like he had part of the back of his scalp shaved up. Like the top was like kind of cut how his was, and he had like a little rat tail at the end of it. But it was braided, but it wasn't puffy at the end. It was just like a little braid. Like, I didn't understand it. It may have been a relic of the 90s, much like how the mullet was or the Rachel was.
Ugh.
But I never really understood it. It may have been a religious thing. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, who
but
knows?
All I knew is that he was the only kid that I'd ever seen that had one of those. So.
There's definitely a dude sitting in front of me at one of the panels yesterday who had that haircut.
Was there really?
Yeah, he had it.
Which panel?
All... The
How to Be a Nerd for a Living Thing?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He had it shaved, like, all around, and then in the back, and then, like, just the top. And he had, like, knotted, like... Essentially made, like, a tiny knot.
Was that part of his costume, or that's just his...
No, that was he wasn't in costume. That was just him.
That just doesn't do it for me. Like, you can go for Fabio, you can go for bald, but just commit. I mean, I don't know. I don't care. I'm not really one to talk. I cut all my hair off back in, or most of it anyway, back in, like, October. So, like, I used to have super, super long hair, and now I've got, like, a pixie kind of thing. But it worked fine for my costume, so.
No,
we should probably mention that we went to C2E2.
Oh, yeah, we went to C2E2.
Right, that's also why last week's episode was a little bit late, because we were busy doing cosplay prep
stuff. Yeah, I was up at, like, 2 or 3 a.m. two nights in a row.
Oh, I couldn't sleep on Friday night.
Really?
I was sitting, like, I think I was more excited for that than I was for Christmas morning when I was a kid. Until I hit, like, 9, and I'm like, oh, we should just sleep in for a little while.
Yeah, right.
So, but, yeah, oh, yes, we should say who the winner is.
So I went as Steven Universe.
And I went as Pearl from Steven Universe.
Yeah.
But I should mention, I went as Pearl after Steven the Swordfighter.
Yeah, because we actually saw, like, right away, we saw a Pearl dressed as, like,
the
earlier episode.
Yeah, like, the first incarnation of Pearl, I guess.
Well, yeah, the first one we see.
Yeah, but, no, it was a lot of fun.
It was.
We spent a lot of money, but it was great.
Hey, man.
I loved it. I mean, like, that's the cotton line. I really want to go to ASIN now. If I can think of another costume to do. When is that? May?
May. We would have to breakneck pace for Prince.
May, early May or late May?
I don't know. We should look at it.
We will look that up.
But we may be there.
We're not talking at all about the movie.
Wait.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We do this.
It just kind of, we're very easily distracted.
I know.
Like, I think we both have maybe a little bit of ADHD. I'm certain I do.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm just lazy to the point where I'm good at convincing other people that I'm not. I don't know.
I think I just have, like, a con hangover. I woke up with, like, a headache and just very tired this morning.
Oh, you know, I got breakfast with a friend this morning. I was like, I need pancakes. Sorry, nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
anyway, but no, all right, so basically the story involves them trying to get back to the, to the kingdom
so
that Cusco can get turned back by Yzma.
Right. So then at the end of the the end of the movie, there's a final confrontation with Yzma, in which she gets turned into a tiny little kitten.
She's so cute.
I know, super cute. And Cusco is turned back into a human. And,
He even learned something.
Yeah, he got. Well, he kind of learned something.
He nearly learned something.
Yeah, came so close to personal growth.
And then he just steps back.
There's
less,
definitely some personal growth there, but
he's less of a butt than he was before. Yeah, yeah. He was pretty insufferable. So.
Right. Well, so there is that mention in the sweatbox. So it ends with the movie with him building the water park, anyways. Like. Essentially next door. Oh, yeah.
That's right. No,
but
yeah.
In the sweatbox, Sting was a integral part of it initially when it was going to be an entirely different movie.
Yeah, we should probably actually mention what the sweatbox is.
We did. We said.
Did we mention it was a documentary?
Yeah, we like started with that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We do need to get into like what the original movie is going to be, but Sting was a big part of it.
Yes.
And so they kind of, I didn't quite understand if there was like, they asked him to be part of it, and then he was, and then they cut it, and so he stopped being part of it, and then they asked him back?
No, yeah, okay, so what happened was, initially Sting was hired by Disney to make, I think, five songs for...
Five or
six. He was, initially the movie was going to be an epic similar to like The Lion King. Where it was supposed to be a Prince and the Pauper kind of story that involved Kuzco, who in the original movie was called Manco, who was the emperor, and Pacha was actually a llama herder, but he was not like the 40-something that we see in the Emperor's New Groove. He was basically Kuzco's doppelganger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, and the story is like they run into each other and they do the whole like swap thing, like so that he can go, so that Manco or Kuzco, we'll just call him Kuzco. I don't like the name Manco. No, apologies to Mancos. So Manco, he tries to go out and like just explore the kingdom as it is, but he gets turned into a non-speaking llama by Yzma. And because like she finds out what's going on, and then she tries to manipulate Pacha into doing what she wants. It was sort of confusing where they were trying to go with the original version.
Yeah,
like,
well,
I didn't really know what was up, which I assume is why they kept changing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's one of the things that, what was it, like, Thomas Schumacher and whoever the other guy was.
Oh, no, Schumer. Was it Schumer? Schumacher?
No, Schumacher.
Schumacher? Okay,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was Mark, or Thomas Schumacher.
Okay.
Because
he was the head of animation at that point?
Yes.
Yeah.
So... him and like another guy, like I don't know, probably some producers or something. They watched it and they were like, "This movie clearly doesn't kind of know where it stands. Like, is it a dramedy? Yeah. Is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it?"
They weren't wrong though, because but I mean, like, in the sense that the more that they go through it, it's like when we were watching the film, it's like we don't really know where they're going with it, because they show certain clips. Like at certain points in the documentary, the animation was like they had. It was more than just the initial line tests. Like, they had good chunk of, like, they had a bunch of storyboards, like, test animations, concept art, everything. Mm-hmm. It was really sad to just see them, like, they had to scrap everything, basically.
Yeah,
but
pretty much
if the story doesn't make sense, it's going to
happen. Right. Well, so it was kind of interesting to see that, and it's kind of disappointing because it was such a, I think...
I think it was a very ambitious movie. It would have been a nice serious take on something, but I think they kind of accomplished some of that with Tarzan though, to an extent, even though it's a different feel.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. The whole like Sting thing kind of reminds me of how they kind of dragged Phil Collins into Tarzan. I felt it probably would have ended up being sort of a similar feel in that sense, but obviously,
because Phil Collins went on to do Brother Bear also, which had some serious stuff in it. Not a lot, but there was some in there.
Yeah, I never watched that one.
It's not great. It's okay. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I like about Emperor's New Groove is it's very outside. It's actually outside of Disney's formula.
Mm-hmm. And it's very approachable.
Yeah, it's very easy to get into and all this.
Yeah.
And it's also probably the only Disney movie we'll do on this show.
Probably. I mean,
I'm fine with.
Well, I'm okay with it because it's so far out of what Disney would usually do. Like, if you watch the movie, it's, I think, was Mark Dindal the director or the associate director or something like that?
Initially, they were co-directors. It was Mark Dindal and,
I've forgotten
the other guy's name.
There were two directors.
This is the director of The Lion King.
The director of The Lion King. I'm sorry.
So it was the two of them initially, and I think it started with the director for The Lion King, and then they brought Mark Dindal on.
Yeah.
And
it was his idea to change the story a little bit to something a bit more wackier, and if if you've seen one of our previous episodes for Cats Don't Dance, Mark Dindal was the director for Cats Don't Dance, right. Which, as we mentioned before, is very zany and silly, fun, very like a period piece from the 1930s about the Hollywood industry.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because it's such a, I don't know, it's like the way that they went about doing the story, it felt more like I was watching a Warner Brothers cartoon than Disney. Like, almost entirely. Like, there were some jokes that were still, like, fairly family-friendly and everything, but having David Spade as a llama is...
It's a little strange.
You would not expect to see that in, yeah. like, a Disney film, but,
Yeah, David Spade yeah. at all in Disney is kind of strange to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, hey, it worked out. I mean, yeah. it's a good one.
And I actually think that David Spade did a great job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's great at being obnoxious.
No, he really is. So...
But, yeah, so... We don't really hate David Spade. Robbie kind of does. No, I'm kidding.
Well, no, I mean, we had this conversation. David yeah. Spade is a man who very much needs someone to act against. So, like, I think his personal style of comedy is very, yeah. like, sort of, like, cynical and, like, almost the yeah. straight man character.
Yeah,
so
like, like talking Laurel and Hardy, where he's usually paired up with, like, a kind of, like, oafish buffoon
yeah,
sort
exactly.
of character.
So,
usually, like, Chris Farley or something similar.
Yeah, yeah. Those
but, two. Like, but that's where he really shines.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a great straight man, like, similar to, you know, like, any buddy comedy. So,
right.
Or,
so.
Like, Lethal Weapon. I don't know. Just maybe don't call Mel Gibson.
Yeah. not good.
No, not ideal. It's, what did you think was the craziest thing about the sweatbox? Like, what surprised you the most about hearing the actual origin story of, like, it goes from being this crazy, like, epic to being a very silly but a lighthearted, fun movie?
A couple things. Probably the biggest one is that when they scrapped it, when they pretty much had to build it back up from the ground up,
mm-hmm.
they had, what, like a year and a half?
No, they had to reanimate, what was
I mean,
that? They had to reanimate the entire movie in 2 years, which for a hand-drawn animated film is insane.
Yeah, and remember
it
also,
usually
like,
takes 4 years for a hand-drawn animated film.
Yeah, this
film.
Thing,
yeah.
The production life of this was 6 years.
Yeah,
so
yeah, they started in 1998, and then,
it would have to have been 94.
94? Really?
Because it was released in 2000.
I get
it. Was.
Okay, all right. Well, whatever. Well, okay, basically, it had to be released by the summer of 2000. So, because
right,
they already had some corporate tie-ins that they could not move.
Right.
And they had to make sure that it got released on time, regardless of
anything
if there
else.
Were certain things that got scrapped, which may make, it might actually be more clear as to why the movie's so short, because the film itself is only 78 minutes.
Yeah,
is a breeze.
Yeah, a thing I didn't realize
yeah,
when I was watching
yeah,
it the other night.
Cats Don't Dance and The Emperor's New Groove are basically the same running time. More or less.
Yeah, yeah, but I think the Emperor's New Groove does more, like,
it's,
I mean, we said this,
yeah.
like, it has more going on in it, so
yeah,
it
well,
feels...
Story-wise, there's
yeah,
a lot
yeah,
more,
more...
It feels fuller, like, it feels like there's
yeah, even though the cast is much smaller.
Yeah, well, let's see, there's the four main characters, there's Cusco, voiced by David Spade, Pacha, voiced by
John Goodman,
Yzma, voiced by Eartha Kitt, and Kronk, voiced by Patrick Warburton.
So good!
Who we love.
Yeah.
Also.
And then there's, Chicha, I think?
Yeah, Chicha, who, yeah, there's a note on there, too, that she's apparently the first pregnant character to ever be seen in a Disney film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I guess they never thought to do that before.
Yeah.
But,
have
they done that since?
Oh,
I don't know
gosh.
If they have.
I don't know.
Let's see. I'm thinking like Princess and the Frog. I can't really think of one to be honest. I don't know. We're gonna have to look into this. Well, no, I mean I'm sure there's one, but off the top of my head, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely not within their like sort of main franchises.
I did. Oh no, the only other one I can think of off the top of my head is Tangled. But that's very brief. Oh, no, do you remember at the very beginning where she has to drink the broth that has the flower in it to save the baby? Like, where she was in labor pains or something, they
yeah.
had to go find the flower and then give her the broth, where she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, that's the only one I can think of, really.
I don't know.
But that's... I wonder why don't they do that more?
I think it...
Like, some of the stories don't necessarily involve
yeah.
it.
I mean, most of the stories about princesses who are already, what,
they're like anywhere from, I think, between 14 and 19...
So,
I think Tiana is the oldest princess. Snow White is the youngest. She was 14 in that movie.
I thought Ariel was 13.
No, Ariel is 16.
Where did I get the number 13?
I don't know. Why would you think she's 13?
I have no idea. Because
that makes it even grosser.
I know.
I feel like, no, because I feel like in that movie that Eric has to be what? He's at least in his 20s.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. With his muscular system? Oh, yeah.
With that ass?
Eric does squats. No, I don't know. What was weird about the movie to me was, or like the strangest thing I thought was the fact that they had to scrap so many songs, because there are some in there that are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I really liked, because the first time that you had heard Yzma's song, in the original movie, Yzma had a villain song called Snuff Out the Light, mm-hmm. where her character, most of her arc surrounded around that she's very vain and very, like, vindictive and manipulative and everything, and that she blames the sun for making her age. Like, that's why she's so wrinkly and gross.
Right, yeah, there was some weird element in that movie of, like, an Incan god that was personified by some weird little, like, tribal mask that she talked to or something.
Yeah,
right?
Like, voiced by Harvey Fierstein, of all people.
I don't even know who that is.
Do you remember in Independence Day, the guy that was...
Never saw it.
You've never seen Independence Day? You've never seen the greatest speech ever made by any character ever?
Bill Pullman? No.
Have you seen Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yeah.
Do you remember the brother with the beard?
Right.
He's like, be careful with this one.
No, that's
she's
right.
an old woman.
When,
that one.
No, yeah, because we were watching and he talked. I was like, it's that guy!
Yeah.
And that's
no,
the only thing
no,
I know
yeah,
him
no,
from.
So, yeah, so that's Harvey Fierstein.
Okay.
But, So I guess Yzma, she has this plan of, like, basically living in darkness so that she'll stop aging, where, like, you're still gonna be pale, but whatever.
Yeah,
it's your prerogative, hun, but, like...
It's very strange.
It did remind me of, kind of, a little bit of Hollywood, of, like, the whole, like, the obsession with, like, cosmetic surgery and looking younger and all that, and, like, juicing, whatever.
Right, juicing.
It's still a thing. It's very much a thing. People growing wheat grass, I don't know. I couldn't do that.
Whoa.
I don't know. I everything I plant dies.
Oh.
I'm trying to take care of a fern, and I killed the fern. Enough about me killing plants.
But my plant murder.
Wanted in 6 states for a crime she totally committed. So Yzma has, I think we should play a clip of it. But so there's a really good villain song about sung by Yzma, where and we love her, the kid's voice too.
Yeah,
so it totally fits her character. They still could have like used it for her if they changed the lyrics a little bit, because the melody's fantastic.
Yeah,
it reminded me a little bit of Dr. Facilier's song from The Princess and the Frog.
Hmm.
A little bit. It's like that and Scar's Be Prepared song, because of, the marimba and the xylophone that they use in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to see that whole sequence animated, because those line tests were great.
Yeah.
They featured a lot of, were they like cave drawings, or, like the outlines of like the jaguars and serpents and crocodiles and stuff. Like, do you remember that part of the...
No, thing? I mean, truthfully, I was fairly distracted when we were watching, because I was working on my shield.
That's true, we were painting things.
Yeah, so we were fairly distracted, but I mean, we still kind of absorbed the general gist of it.
They it just had a it was a really cool little sequence.
It was
fun.
Like,
because we apparently how Yzma's father used to be the mortician, and that's how she learned about the
tent. Yeah, that's right.
Do you remember that? Yeah,
I remember hearing it.
Like,
definitely,
when I was a girl at my daddy's side, Papa the royal mortician.
Yep. No, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, it's anyway.
That would have
we have to play it. It's a very fun song.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can find it.
But
It's on YouTube.
Yeah,
I listened to it on there. As are some of the other songs, the demos for the love song that they recorded, that was supposed to be in Kingdom of the Sun originally.
Right,
that one's on there too.
Oh yeah, that was the original name of the movie, was Kingdom of the Sun.
Yes, yes.
Not,
we should mention
not
that.
The Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah, but yeah, it's I don't know, like, why do you think, going through the sweatbox itself, like, it became apparent as to why the movie kind of failed how it did. How they had to reformat it.
Yeah.
But Disney also kept this documentary under lock and key. Like,
yeah.
They don't want anyone to see it.
It was not super kind to some of them.
No, not really.
Honesty is not always kind.
No, it's very seldom kind, actually. But no, it's, what was it? So there's no real. It's not like okay. So since it's a documentary, they're not trying to paint anyone as a villain. It's more of like an argument of like they're just doing their jobs, which they are. Like the directors and the creative people that come in, they're there to try to like just do the best job that they can. But if something's not working, it's just not working. It's like being at a job where if you're just not a good fit for it, you just have to suck it up and either you can try to make things work, but if there's clear creative differences, you can't really do anything about
it. Yeah, well, I think that was one of the things also with, like, essentially with this movie is, like, since you had two directors on, you had Mark Dimble and you had the other guy whose name was Roger Allers.
Yeah. They had such different visions
for the movie. Yeah, they probably had different visions for the movie, so that's why ultimately it kind of diverged.
Mm-hmm.
And it became what it is. Mm-hmm. But also, I think, I was kind of thinking of this a little bit earlier. But you remember when we were talking about Song of the Sea, and when they initially came up with the script, they had what they called the fat baby.
I love that term so much. That term is so perfect.
You love it. It's fat, but you just can't.
You can't have everything that you want in it.
Exactly. I think that's ultimately what Kingdom of the Sun kind of was for Roger Allers. Mm-hmm. Is it was his fat baby, and he couldn't. I think he unfortunately couldn't reconcile it into. He couldn't reconcile what he wanted with, you know, what it would have needed to be produced.
Yeah,
you know, which is a real shame because it was, you know, I think
because I thought the concept was really cool.
The concept was really cool.
Since Disney is well known for like doing reinterpretations of either fairly well known fairy tales or folk tales, stuff like that, like, which is fine. And everybody does it, and they don't have to pay rights to anybody, which is great. I think maybe they were worried that it could have paralleled too much. They made a short involving the Prince and the Pauper that featured Mickey. It was a short that ran, I think, before The Rescuers Down Under. Actually, I remember seeing that in theaters. It was either that or another one from the early 90s. But
see, I don't remember. I didn't see it in theaters, but I know they released it alongside a couple other short cartoons.
Yeah, because you've seen the short, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So, which I get, and I think I don't know if they were conscious of that, but I think they were just like, you know what, we should do this a little bit like more original, which it's fine. I mean, like, because I don't know if we would really like the movie as much if it was like that, but since we only know it as a comedy.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, like, we're looking at what we have, which is The Emperor's New Groove, which is a young, goofy, zany comedy.
Yeah.
And then we're looking at what they wanted to make, which was Kingdom of the Sun, which was genre confused.
Yeah.
It didn't know what genre it was, which I think ultimately, like, you can, like, genre is more of a marketing tool than anything else.
Yeah.
That said, you have to, like, if you don't have a clearly, if you can't fit your movie into a genre, then you can't market it, and it also lacks some level of direction.
Yeah,
because you can play the same plot as a comedy and as a drama, and it will read as two entirely different movies.
Plus, they had done a bunch of different focus groups surrounding like those problems that they saw during the development process, but it kept testing really poorly, and it wasn't just with random people that they found for their focus group; it was with. The rest, like the higher ups too,
right?
Where
exactly.
They were like, we don't know what to do with this, and that's a really hard thing to hear. Like, if you're an artist and you put a lot of work into something, to hear that this thing is so unclear, it's really debilitating.
Yeah.
You want to do everything in your power to fix it, but sometimes it's just if you have to start from the ground up again, especially when you have a deadline, it's nerve-wracking.
And
there must have been a little bit of like resentment or something between both of the directors because they're different styles just don't really intermingle that well. It would feel like a really poor hodgepodge.
Yeah. I think it would get that same kind of like I feel like there's almost a dissonance in Lion King where you have like
oh, I totally get that.
Well, you know, like everything with Timon and Pumbaa is super fun. Like
it's super fun and like fun and colorful. Really
right,
but
and
the
colorful.
First is like you straight up iced your dad, Simba. Now feel sorry about it while I try to make you feel guilty and never want to come back for the rest of your life. Abandon your family through the sheer amount of guilt that you've been wrongly accused of murdering your father. Love Scar.
Love your jerk uncle.
Love Jeremy Irons.
God, it's him.
A monkey's uncle. I don't really like The Lion King that much, too. I should probably mention that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a ton against it, but I think there are much stronger films. This also has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
This brought to you by my rambling brain. I should probably think before a duck.
That's fine. One thing we found out is the... we talked about Eartha Kitt as Yzma.
Yeah.
And apparently Barbara Streisand was the original choice.
I'm so glad Thank they God. Did not go with Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, oh man.
Like, and it's, like, what would they have, like, I can't even imagine her singing that song.
Oh.
Well, no, I mean, like the style that they have, I feel like Sting Taylor made it for Eartha Kitt because she had, like, okay, for those of you who aren't in the know, she used to be on the original Batman. Where
yeah,
she was
she's
Catwoman.
The original Catwoman.
She was the Catwoman that wasn't, what's your face?
Halle Berry?
No. No. Not Halle Berry.
I don't have a whole catalog of Catwomen in my mind.
Whoever it was, there was one that wanted to be cast in the Tim Burton Batman movie or something. That's not Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, she was the one of the other original Catwomen from...
oh, I have no idea.
If you guys are screaming into your headphones like, it's this person! I'm sorry, I don't remember off the top of my head. It was out of my era. I know Cesar Romero, who was the Joker, and now he painted over his mustache. Is that your Joker laugh?
No, I'm just laughing. I find that funny.
Yeah, no. Well, no, because he refused to shave off his mustache, so they had to paint over it.
I get that.
Yep, I get it. It's a lot of work, and he was rocking it.
Yeah.
But the 60s were really kind to Cesar Romero. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, I could never imagine Barbara Streisand doing that.
Yeah.
Because I don't find her very cuddly.
Well,
I don't think that the atmosphere of that film would have been a good fit for her at all. I think of Barbara Streisand, I think of Yentl, I think of New York, I think of, like, just, like, Broadway, basically. That's not...
It would be...
I don't think that would overlap very well with a movie like Kingdom in the Sun.
Yeah, and I think Yzma herself would have been a much different character.
Yeah, I mean, like, Eartha Kitt is also slinky. Like, Yzma looks a bit like Eartha Kitt, like, the way that her, like, face is kind of built. She's got...
Yeah,
she's kind of got
like
Eartha's...
High
she's,
cheekbones.
Yeah,
and...
she looks a bit like Eartha Kitt in a nice way.
Yeah, the kindest way we can make that comparison.
And, like, Eartha Kitt girl looks like... No, she doesn't. We love her, and we miss her very much.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Eartha Kitt.
Yeah, so,
But, oh, and Owen Wilson was originally supposed to be the voice of Pacha.
Right,
when
yeah.
When he was supposed to be the twin version of, or the look-alike version of, Manco, or Cusco.
Right, yeah, so, that's the other thing that's kind of strange to think about, is, like, imagine being, like, hired on to be a voice actor, and then, you know, X amount of work had been, like, this movie was, like, almost half done.
I'm sure that he must have recorded all of his dialogue and everything, and they're just like, oh, we have to peace out.
Your character doesn't exist anymore.
Sorry, guy.
Which was kind of an interesting, in the sweatbox, they were talking about that, and one of the guys was like, you know, every other day someone's telling me, like, listen, we're probably gonna have to cut your character, you probably won't be in the movie anymore. It was Chicha.
Chicha, Pacha's wife.
When they were in production after they, you know, started over, I guess her character animator kept, like, every other day, they'd be like, listen, we might not have much room for Chicha in the movie, okay?
Oh,
like, this is
which is a shame, because I adore Chicha.
Which
she's
a
great character.
But so then later, like, he's like, and then the next day, they're like, buddy, like, listen, we've actually done more, so there's gonna be plenty of Chicha in the movie. And he's like, all right. And then, like, the next day, they're like, there's a ton of her, like, she's gonna be all over the place, it's gonna be great. And he's like, cool.
You know,
like,
it's like,
he sounded very tired, but he's like, I hear different things about every day, so...
He's like, I don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah, right. So
he's just so bummed out. Like,
yeah.
Half the animators that they interview, they're just like, it's like they're waiting to be, like, I don't know, like they're trying to, like, get on an overcrowded plane. Like, like they're waiting to see, like, maybe I'll go on standby, and they're just like... And they're just like, I don't know, like, I'd really like to get there earlier, but it's like, well, my flight was originally canceled, so they had to bump me to this one, but this was never booked,
so
and they're like,
standby for a new flight.
Where it's like, they're so hungry to, like, keep working, but since they keep getting stalled by everything, it's like, I mean, that's, just, like, it's, I guess, just part of the creative process in a nutshell, where...
Yeah,
like,
well, I mean, that's a, I mean, like, yeah, at the, I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, making a movie, and especially, like, making a movie for, like, a large company like Disney, like, guess what? You have to produce, and you have to make money.
Yeah.
So if your movie doesn't look like it's gonna make money, guess what? You're gonna have to start over.
Yeah.
Like, so that's what happened.
Yeah. And what's worse is that since it's animated, if you're shooting a regular film, it can, some films can be shot in, like, I would say, like, maybe half a year or something. It depends on how, big the film is. Like, if you're talking, like, I don't know, like, say, we'll bring back James Cameron again. Like, if it's, like, Avatar or something, like, most of the principal acting is shot, or if it's composited, whatever. The actual actors, like, that stuff can get shot within maybe, like, 6 months, maybe. Sometimes 9 months, it depends how big the movie is.
Yeah, well,
but
it depends on that, and also depends on, like, how much perfectionist the director is, right?
Yeah,
like,
or what the schedule of the actor is, too.
Right.
Because if they're a double book, like, say if you have Ryan Gosling or something where it's, like, he has to go from one thing to another, you have to work around that, too.
Yeah, or, like, 2008 Robert Downey Jr., who was everywhere.
Yeah, that was a big year for him.
Yeah, 2008,
2009-ish.
Like,
yeah, what was
right
it?
After.
Yeah, it was like Iron Man due date. Like, I don't even know how many other films. But
yeah, he was.
Yeah, but when you have to work around that sort of thing, you have to coordinate that with other actors and make sure everyone can be there at a certain point. That you can get all your locations figured out.
Yeah,
that you've got permits, enough cameras.
There was
everything. It's such a nightmare. And when you have to animate all that stuff, you could be working on something for God knows how long, like,
and then they're just like chuck it.
Yeah, well, yeah, like if we're, especially hand animated is 24 drawings a second.
Oh, God.
So you need 24 frames of animation to have fairly fluid animation. If you want to give them crazier, 36, but 24 is standard. So that's 24 drawings for one person. That could take I don't even know how many days.
Yeah,
but it's that amount. Like sometimes they have a minimum of how many seconds of animation an animator has to complete in a week. And to know that entire segment that you got cut is getting completely canned,
like,
I would be livid.
Like, imagine if you, like, had spent, like, a month animating, like, you know, like, probably a five-minute scene.
Yeah, like,
and you're just like, I am going to kill. So, like, oh.
I had a similar thing like that in college, where
really?
I was trying to render, I had to make this 3D short as, like, a final for a 3D animation class I was taking. So what happened was we had a very limited amount of spare computers available to do what's called a render farm. So you would have a single, you would have your project rendering on certain different machines to be able to render frames individually so that eventually when you're going through and editing everything, everything looks pristine how it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is there were, in my class, there were at least, like, 12 people that all had to do the same thing.
And they were definitely not 12 computers.
No. There were 12 computers, but it's preferred to have two or three rendering all your stuff at the same time. To ease up the process, because I had to sit in the computer lab for about 9 hours waiting for things to render, and I can't do anything else. So, like, I had to be there to make sure that it didn't error out. I had to, like...
Right, you had to monitor it.
Yeah, I had to make sure that my external hard drive was plugged in there so that it would know exactly where the scratch disk was to be able to copy it onto... Yeah, it was a nightmare.
Yeah, no.
and at a certain point, it's not like we lost power, but it looked like, number one, my computer was crashing, and I was worried that that was going to corrupt the external hard drive that I had it saved onto, which it did. And I started crying in the computer lab.
Yeah.
Because I'd been sitting there for 8 hours, and I was...
At the ninth hour, I just
sat there, my professor came over, she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm so sorry, like, it's just crashed, and I don't know what to do, like, because keep in mind, on the same external hard drive, I had, like, all my other backed up files, too.
Right, yeah.
I had some spare stuff, but, like,
you didn't just lose your project.
Yeah,
you
I lost the entire backup from my laptop, and I was... And then I had this brick just sitting there, and I was, like, just bawling. I was like, I don't know what to do, and I'm so tired, and I've been here for, like, this entire past 2 weeks just trying to get this thing done. And, but, like, it does have a happy ending, though. A friend of mine, actually a very talented, very tech-savvy friend of mine, had, like, I told...
Was able to recover it.
I told her what the situation was, and, she was like, okay, let me take a look at it, and, I gave it to her. She was able to not only recover all the files, she was able to show me exactly where it stopped rendering the frames. So I knew exactly where to start re-rendering the frames again, and I was like, ah! And I gave them a hug, and I took them out to go get dinner, and, like, food and stuff, and I'm like, you're the best, thank you so much, and it was... it was really nice of them. Yeah. I don't think I'll work with Maya for a while unless I have another computer specifically just for rendering, because Maya is a very fickle mistress.
Yeah, yeah.
We had so many recurring problems with it, but it's just, it's very powerful, but you need to have a dedicated server to make sure it can handle it, because otherwise, I had another one of my classmates that he would use like six computers to be able to render his stuff. But to be fair, his project was enormous, and he now works at Nickelodeon.
Oh wow!
So yeah, no, he's very talented. Like there's I went to school with some really talented people, which is and you love seeing like how their projects and everything grow. Right. But it's like if you are in a class and you lose everything, oh god. It was a nightmare, but you get lessons from it because you know, like, okay, now I know that I have to do this. I do it in individual chunks and then I can just re-edit it. So, yeah, but like it's animation is a process for people that are very patient and possibly shut-ins.
Yeah,
so,
I certainly was. I've definitely thought about it and I'm like, I could not animate. I don't have the patience.
Like, I don't mind it, but eventually it's just like, I need to go out and like, just talk and go get food and chill out with people. Because when you're just sitting in the room like a caged gerbil or something, like, just looking around.
Some poor hamster in a too small cage.
Yeah, so, yeah, like some poor hamster stuck in a tube. Like, that's trying to crawl through, but he's too fat to do it. But
on the topic of, like, this is backtracking a bit.
It's fine.
But, like, packed schedules for actors. On Community, they had Jack Black for an episode, and they had him for, like, 12 hours.
12 hours?
It was
Wait, how long
it was like,
his cameo? Was it the whole episode?
It was an episode, so he was in for an episode, and he was in probably a good, like, quarter to half the episode. He was in for a bit, so, like...
Could you imagine?
They shot it in, like... I'm pretty sure it was under 20... It might not have been 12 hours, but it was definitely, like, under 24 hours, because he was so packed. And they were like, he is a machine!
I believe it!
Which
I mean,
is not
like,
shocking. Like,
not at all,
good.
But, like, to think that, like, you have this allotment, if anything goes wrong, like, if you are slightly late, if you can't get the script to them in time, if someone's late with their marks, or if a light goes out, or if one of the system or the cameras backs up, you're screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's nothing until someone ends up coming over there. But for a 12-hour gap, wherein, like, this is how long you have me, please don't mess this up.
Yeah, yeah, no. They were very lucky in Community. They had some people like...
But that entire series is a powerhouse.
Yeah.
Like, they,
well, it was.
It was. It was.
I have no idea what this season's like.
Didn't care for season 4.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think many people did.
Season 5 wasn't great.
No.
We're off topic.
Yeah, anyway.
Sorry.
Watch Community and watch...
Yeah, watch the first 3 years of Community.
Watch Community and have an immense amount of respect for animators.
Yeah, seriously.
Because they literally, like, they work for their art. Like, if you're animating, you could just spend, like, 3 days in the same room and not really leave. Like,
yeah.
I think, like, what is it, like, Alex Hirsch, the creator of Gravity Falls, he regularly sleeps in the office because he's working so much to make sure that things get out. Like, he sleeps on the couch. Like, they just chill out there.
Sleeps like, in a buffalo.
No, I wish. I wish he slept on top of Beardy, like Snoopy, like his back. I would love that.
I'm pretty sure he would wake up the next morning and just be completely hunchbacked over the computer.
In the quiet time of evening, when the stars assume their patterns, and the day has made his journey, and we wonder just what happened to the life we knew before the world changed, when not a thing I held was true. But you were kind to me, and you reminded me that the world is not my playground. There are other things that matter.
But yeah, so animating is a hard gig.
It's a hard gig, but it's very rewarding because you get to create life by making it every day. No birth control needed. But no, yeah, it's let's see. Is there anything else we forgot to talk about?
No, yeah, I think we're actually pretty much at a point where we can wrap it up.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's do some closing thoughts, I guess. If King of the Sun was made, do you still think you would watch it?
Yeah,
like, do you think the story was interesting enough for you to check out? Like, because I'm thinking of, like, now and comparing it to, like, Book of Life, which is very much all about, like, Mexican history with Day of the Dead.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot. Yeah, yeah. Actually, I didn't even think of that comparison.
Well, I mean, like, it's, like, the only modern comparison I can think of right now. Yeah, or aside from, like, the fact that Emperor's New Groove and Road to El Dorado came out at roughly the same time, but that was that part. I think it might have been linked to that whole DreamWorks Disney dueling thing that happened where, like, they released Bug's Life, then they released Ants at the same time. Or they released, Shrek and Monsters, Inc. roughly at the same time.
When
did it? Oh, yeah, 2001, 2002, whatever it was. It was a very weird trend, like, you know, like how they tried, they released, like Monsters vs. Aliens and something else. Shark Tale and Finding Nemo were released at the same time.
Yeah, okay.
It was a thing, like, I think I'd seen a video about it online, like Nostalgia Chick or Nostalgia Critic or something, yeah. I think it was one of them. But, I feel like I would probably still watch it.
I would probably still watch it. I mean, it would be a much different movie, right? I think if Kingdom of the Sun, that was the original name?
Yeah.
I think if that were released, it would have had to be a different movie even from what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably still see that. I don't know if I would love it as much. I would probably... Yeah.
I don't think it would have had the staying power.
Yeah, like, well, and I think I probably would have... would probably be a movie that I look back on fondly, mm-hmm. but not that I love in the same way that I love Emperor's New Groove.
Well, I don't think that it would be as rewatchable as the Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I don't know, like, there are certain traits of, like, movies that we really like. I don't know. Some of them are, like, cult classics, wherein the traits of cult classics are, like, they're lesser known sleeper hits. They maybe didn't do as well in theaters, but when they're released on DVD or video, yeah, they do really well. Most of them have quotable dialogue, great music, or they feature like a lot of character actors that, like, it's kind of geared towards a niche, and that's what people identify with.
Right.
Like, one that we had growing up with was a Goofy movie as well, yeah. And how I guess Superbad was one for a while. It was released as, like, we were like, oh, we don't really know if it's going to do that well, but then it exploded.
Yeah, it did well, actually.
Dewey Cox would be another one. Walk Hard is one that we also really love.
Yeah, despite the public's feelings.
Which is weird, though, because, like, what was it, like, a year later they released Step Brothers, and it just blew up.
Yeah.
Same deal, but it's Will Ferrell's star power, because he had a huge run between 2006, 2008, whatever. Or until Bewitched happened, and then he got kind of overexposed.
No, because Step Brothers, I think, was after Bewitched, even.
Was it?
I think so.
I don't know.
We're going to look into this.
No, we're not. We're not going to research Bewitched. I'm not looking that up. Like, no one cares. No. Anyway, like, cult movies exist for a reason, and that, like, it's geared towards... I mean, like, at the time, Back to the Future was considered a cult movie for a while.
Yeah, which Ghostbusters was
considered
about.
A cult
yeah.
movie. Where, like, and now they're so ingrained in our pop culture that you see references to them for everything. Even Star Wars was the same deal. And, like,
really?
It was, but it was the audience that it was geared towards. I mean, like, Star Trek was the same thing, where initially when the Star Trek series originally came out back in the early 60s...
They almost got canceled right away.
Yeah, they got canceled, and there was a letter writing campaign by fans saying, like, please don't cancel this. Like, and, like, the same thing happened with, what was it, Firefly or something? But it didn't really... No, it didn't.
Firefly
well, it should have.
Firefly got crammed in the ground, but one of the... Yeah. As an aside about that,
yeah.
One of the panels we went to was the Cards Against Humanity panel, and they showed this old ad, and it is so terrible.
It was almost like a Malcolm in the Middle ad, but it's for Firefly. It's like, what happens when this wacky...
Yeah, it was so bad, like, but it was all done by, like, a really intense sports announcer.
Yeah.
And also, like, oh, so bad, like, a cosmic hooker, like, oh, God. That's not what she is at all.
Where they try to use some kind of, like phrasing that you wouldn't really expect to hear in an ad that's supposed to be taken seriously, you would think that they would try to make it sound more compelling. Like how the Mad Men announced... How the announcers on Mad Men are like, previously on Mad Men. Like, it's really intense, and the fact that they released that ad, it was just like, wow. Fox had no idea what they actually had there. No,
they really didn't. It was so out there.
Yeah, but in retrospect, it makes Fox look completely foolish, which is great.
Yeah, so, anything to mock Fox.
Yeah, like, sorry, Rupert Murdoch, we don't really care for you, but you probably don't care for us either, so I guess we're even. But, yeah, it's, I don't know, like, it. I guess, any other closing thoughts we've got? Why do you like The Emperor's New Groove so much? What is it, like, what stays with you the most? Like, when you're rewatching it, is it, like, quoting the dialogue? Is it how the characters work so well?
It's Kronk.
Kronk.
It's Kronk. It's Kronk. I think I can summarize the way that they deal with Kronk in the movie versus, like, the unexpected straight-to-home video and then TV series.
Which made no sense to me, but the voice of Kusko was by Jim Rash, who was the dean on Community.
Yes.
Fun fact, everybody.
Yep.
But, which, and now if you listen to it, you won't be able to separate the two.
Yep. Have fun with that.
Yep.
But he's just sort of this goof, and again, I think we get that sort of, like, the oaf and the straight man, because we have Yzma, who is very, like, very singularly minded and
methodical,
sort of
calculating.
And methodical, nefarious person. And then you've got Kronk, who wanders into a kitchen to ask a question that ends up being the chef and, like, just taking it seriously and playing it straight.
Despite
the fact that he's currently hunting down.
Kronk's interesting because he's supposed to be a minion, but he more has, like, the mind of a, like, maybe like a personal trainer or something and a life coach because he's so encouraging for, like, he's, like, generally really cool with everybody. He befriends Chicha and her kids immediately. Like, when Yzma and Kronk go to try to investigate where Kusko might be hiding, like, if he's over at Pacha's hut, like, he starts playing jump rope with the kids. They're, like, he's doing double dutch with two hands and no one else is holding the other ropes. It's so perfect.
Yeah, it was so good.
But, like, yeah, and, like, they just love having Kronk there, and
now let's not wait till the next family reunion to see each other, okay?
I gotta run. But he just gets along with everybody. It's like, Kronk, there's no reason you should be with Yzma, but he stays with her, and we don't know why.
Yeah, he's kind of that,
like, he just never really questions it. Or, like, he has a couple moments of, like, questioning the the morality of what he's doing. He's got the shouldering, like, the shoulder angel and the shoulder devil. Which, like, the shoulder devil is just basically him in, like, a red jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Like, reason number two. Look what I could do.
Doesn't have to do with anything. No. He's got a point. Also the fact that they mock that he, like, not only does he have those, but he actually, like, mimes talking.
They look back at him and he looks like he's hallucinating, like, talking to his shoulders, and they're all like, we don't know what he's doing.
What's going on right now? So good.
And, like, it's got that very fun fourth wall breaking kind of sense of humor. Because, what is it? Like, one of my favorite jokes that they have is where they have this chase sequence that involves them going over the map towards the kingdom. Then Yzma and Kronk, Kronk has Yzma mounted on, like, this backpack thing that has a chair or whatever in the back of it. They look behind it and there's a blue arrow that's following them, like how it is on the map. They look at it and they just, like, shrug. They're like, I don't know.
Whatever.
Because that's the same thing that's on the map during the montage.
Right, yeah. Well, but then they
get
back.
That was so perfect.
And then when they're back and they're like, how did we get back here? Pulls off the map and
it's like, there's no way we could have beaten them. It's like, well, by all accounts, it doesn't make sense.
Well, okay. Makes sense.
And then they just shrug it off.
It's like, all right, well.
I like it. They're basically addressing all those like gripes and stuff that would have come up on like an internet forum later.
Yeah, that's
but they're so self aware of what's going on. Like that's why I love stuff like that in like Community, like where they know, like they understand their audience so well.
Yeah, well, seeing Community is very clever because it. I'm gonna stop myself right there because there's a whole lot I could say there, but yeah.
But a lot of Community's humor is based around those, like, subverting certain tropes tendencies in, especially in sitcoms.
Well, especially in like the first and second year when we're still getting to know some of the characters and Abed is still kind of like re-socializing himself, I guess. I don't even want to figure that. The show is so genre savvy, like it the show itself knows what's going on, but at the same time, it plays it straight. Like,
yeah,
these are ridiculous scenarios, and everyone understands they're ridiculous, but they still just go at it.
Like, what was the episode that involved the pillow fight one? Like, Pillow Town.
Yeah, they build the biggest blanket fort, and then they have another one where they build the biggest pillow fort.
Yeah, and they're at war with each other.
yeah, that was like the end of season 3. No, wait, was
so
that four?
Good, no, it was, I think it was 3.
I can't remember.
But no, like, it's, I don't know, like, it's, I think it's just one of those kind of anomaly films that just comes up where it's like, you know what? It's like the humor is so tight. It's very well, like, the plot moves so quickly. And like, eventually you come out and be, you come out liking Cusco a little bit. Where, like, he actually, oh, yeah. he becomes more self-aware. He's more empathetic. He is not so quick to, like, you know, treat people like objects and everything.
Right.
Which is great. And, like, it shows that he actually, there is some hope for him.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Which is nice.
Yeah, and the characters are well done.
Yeah. It's just such a fun movie. Yeah, it's just a really, it's a fun way to spend an afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting
thinking about the, like, the movie that we have versus what we could have had.
True.
But yeah, so that's us on, Lucy, anything else you want to say?
If you want to try to find a copy of The Sweatbox, I don't know if that's, I'm not sure how easy that's going to be, because Disney is very strict about trying to filter that, like, so if someone tries to release a stream of it, or tries to put it up on, like, a file sharing system, or a file sharing website, they're usually very quick to take them down. I'm sure you could probably find it somehow, but if you can check it out, like, the documentary itself is, it's pretty fun to watch. Like, it's very well made, and it's, we later found out that it was made by Sting's wife. Like, she was chronicling how he had this process with going with Disney, because that was the, like, that's kind of a milestone for someone, like, if they're a musician, if they get asked to do work for Disney, like, that's great.
Yeah.
It helped revive Elton John's career in the 90s entirely.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but, yeah, it's, if you can find it, I'd highly recommend you check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Check it out if you can. It's very interesting.
It's, especially seeing all the original test animation and everything was, because it goes through such a drastic redesign, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you watch the characters, like, it looks a lot like kind of how Cats Don't Dance did, like, with, like, some of the style of the characters.
Yeah.
Like, or they play up more of, like, the squash and stretch that you would see in old-timey cartoons.
Yeah, that was one thing I noticed when I was watching it the other night. I was like, wow, the expressions on this are, like, really right there.
Yeah, especially all their shrugging. Oh, it's so perfect.
Yeah, well, that was one thing I wanted. I completely forgot about one of the things I loved in that documentary is they show, like, literally every artist had, like, a little mirror somewhere in their room. So they would constantly be making faces at themselves.
You gotta go for accuracy. That's still one of the best ways to do it.
So that was interesting. So. And also they talked about, like, essentially, like, finding, like, character's expressions.
Yeah.
Like, the way in which a character makes faces and things.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting to me.
But just I guess that's our dual review. I hope this wasn't too weird of a format to do, but I think, like, with how the movies just, I mean, like, so, since they're so interconnected, like, it's really interesting if you watch the documentary to then go back and rewatch The Emperor's New Groove to see how much of it is so different. Like, and you can see certain overlaps of, like, what they ended up keeping and what they had to supplement. And it's, like, where you try to imagine it being that more epic movie, and it's like, it's so, well, like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine it being any different than what it is now. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Hope you guys that you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is at TC Trausch. That's T as in Tom, C as in Cat, T as in Tom again, R as in Rabbit, A as in Apple, U as in Unicorn, S as in Sam, C as in Cat, H as in House, T as in Tom. That's on both Instagram and on Twitter.
I don't use my actual name for that exact reason. It's very hard to spell.
I more did it because I tried to, like, get Twitter to do... Well, no, like, I tried to go on Twitter for, like, professional stuff, and I eventually just end up retweeting a whole lot of, like, either art stuff or Rob Delaney tweets or or making, like, weird observations about stupid things I find at a grocery store. It's kind of my thing. But
I love those.
I find some pretty great ones. Yeah. I found a very passive-aggressive cereal recently.
Yeah, yeah.
But, no, I just, like, I like all these, like, weird names for products that I don't think should exist, but just, like, in pictures of it.
And I'm at lobster_writer on Twitter and lobster99 on Instagram.
Yep.
So if you want to follow us there.
You can send us comments. If there's something that you want us to watch, just send a tweet at us. Or just comment on the
episode, whatever.
Yeah, or I'll put a picture up of the episode art that I do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then If there's something that you either have questions about or if you want us to do something, just let us know.
Yeah, if there's something you...
We're kind of junkies for our phones. So I have mine directly adjacent to my my nightstand. So it's kind of a problem. But so yeah, thanks everybody. I hope you have a great week.
Yeah.
Or weekend. Whenever you hear this, have a great whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks again. Have a great time listening to our thing. Okay, bye. Just like us all, and her beautiful years are done. So now she prays through endless days to take her revenge on the sun. When I was a girl at my daddy's side, Papa, the royal mortician, revealed to me in secret signs the mark of the magician. And daddy was no dummy, did outrageous things with the mummy, and often the stiffs that he would drive were no better dead than they did alive. I studied well, I learned the trade, I thought my looks would never fade. If I could find that recipe to give eternal youth to me, it was always my ambition to use Papa's tuition and gain some small remission from the vagaries of time. Every little ray of sunshine robbed me of my youth. Who to blame? Who the one? Who to curse? You know the only one to blame would be my enemy, the sun.